5. There was a moment of thunderstruck silence, and then Eddie nodded thoughtfully.
Sure. Why not?
The Sombra Corporation doesn't have a topping privilege in their little agreement. They probably tried, but Tower wouldn't go for it. So sure, we'll buy it. How many deerskins do you think he'll want? 40? 50? If he's a real hard bargainer, maybe we can throw in some relics from the old people. You know, cups and plates and arrowheads. They'd be conversation pieces at cocktail parties. Susanna was looking at him reproachfully. Okay, maybe not so funny, Eddie said. But we have to face the facts, son. We're nothing but a bunch of dirty-ass pilgrims, currently camped out in some other reality. I mean, this isn't even mid-world anymore.
Also, Jake said apologetically, we weren't even really there. At least, not the way you are when you go through one of the doors. They sensed us, but basically we were invisible.
Let's take one thing at a time, Susanna said. As far as money goes, I have plenty. If we could get at it, that is.
How much? Jake asked. I know that's sort of impolite. My mother'd faint if she heard me ask someone that, but
we've come a little bit too far to worry about being polite, Susanna said.
Truth is, honey, I don't exactly know. My dad invented a couple of new dental processes that had to do with capping teeth, and he made the most of it, started a company called Holmes Dental Industries, and handled the financial side mostly by himself until 1959.
The year Mort pushed you in front of the subway train, Eddie said.
She nodded. That happened in August. About 6 weeks later, my father had a heart attack, the first of many. Some of it was probably stress over what happened to me, but I won't own all of it. He was a hard driver, pure and simple.
You don't have to own any of it, Eddie said. I mean, it's not as if you jumped in front of that subway car, Suze.
I know, but how you feel and how long you feel it doesn't always have a lot to do with objective truth. With Mama gone, it was my job to take care of him, and I couldn't handle it. I could never completely get the idea that it was my fault out of my head.
Gone days, Roland said, and without much sympathy.
Thanks, Shug, Susanna said dryly. You have such a way of putting things in perspective. In any case, my dad turned over the financial side of the company to his accountant after that first heart attack, an old friend named Moses Carver. After my dad passed, Pop Mose took care of things for me. I'd guess that when Roland yanked me out of New York and into this charming piece of nowhere, I might have been worth $8 or $10 million. Would that be enough to buy Mr. Tower's lot, always assuming he'd sell it to us?
He probably would sell it for deerskins, if Eddie's right about the beam, Roland said. I believe a deep part of Mr. Tower's mind and spirit, the car that made him hold on to the lot for so long in the first place, has been waiting for us.
Waiting for the cavalry, Eddie said, with a trace of a grin, like Fort Ord in the last 10 minutes of a John Wayne movie.
Roland looked at him, unsmiling. He's been waiting for the white.
Susanna held her brown hands up to her brown face and looked at them. Then I guess he isn't waiting for me, she said.
Yes, Roland said, he is,
and wondered briefly what color that other one was.
Mia.
We need a door, Jake said.
We need at least two, Eddie said. One to deal with Tower, sure, but before we can do that, we need one to go back to Susanna's when, and I mean as close to when Roland took her as we can possibly get.
It'd be a bummer to go back to 1977, get in touch with this guy Carver, and discover he had Odetta Holmes declared legally dead in 1971, that the whole estate had been turned over to relatives in Green Bay or San Berdoo.
Or to go back to 1968 and discover Mr. Carver was gone, Jake said. Funneled everything into his own accounts and retired to the Costa del Sol.
Susanna was looking at him with a shocked, oh my lands, expression that would have been funny under other circumstances.
Pop Mose would never do such a thing. Why, he's my godfather.
Jake looked embarrassed.
Sorry. I read lots of mystery novels. Agatha Christie, Rex Stout, Ed McBain, and stuff like that happens in them all the time.
Besides, Eddie said, big money can do weird things to people.
She gave him a cold and considering glance that looked strange, almost alien on her face. Roland, who knew something Eddie and Jake didn't, thought it a frog-squeezing look.
How would you know? She asked.
And then almost at once, oh, sugar, I'm sorry. That was uncalled for. It's okay, Eddie said. He smiled. The smile looked stiff and unsure of itself. Heat of the moment.
He reached out, took her hand, squeezed it. She squeezed back. The smile on Eddie's face grew a little, started to look as if it belonged there.
It's just that I know Moses Carver. He's as honest as the day is long.
Eddie raised his hand, not signaling belief so much as an unwillingness to go any further down that path. Let me see if I understand your idea, Roland said. First, it depends upon our ability to go back to your world of New York at not just one point of when, but two. There was a pause while they parsed that. And then Eddie nodded.
Right, 1964, to start with. Susanna's been gone a couple of months, but nobody's given up hope or anything like that. She strolls in, everybody claps. Return of the prodigal daughter. We get the dough, which might take a little time.
The heart part's apt to be getting Pop Mose to let go of it, Susanna said. When it comes to money in the bank, that man got a tight grip, and I'm pretty sure that in his heart he still sees me as 8 years old.
But legally it's yours, right? Eddie asked.
Roland could see that he was still proceeding with some caution. Hadn't quite got over that crack, how would you know, just yet, and the look that had gone with it.
I mean, he can't stop you from taking it, can he?
No, honey, she said. My dad and Pop Mose made me a trust fund, but it went moot in 1959 when I turned 25.
She turned her eyes, dark eyes of amazing beauty and expression, upon him.
There. You don't need to devil me about my age anymore, do you? If you can subtract, you can figure it out for yourself.
It doesn't matter, Eddie said. Time is a face on the water.
Roland felt goose flesh run up his arms. Somewhere, perhaps in a glaring, blood-colored field of roses still far from here, a Rusty had just walked over his grave.
6.
Has to be cash, Jake said in a dry, business-like tone.
Huh?
Eddie looked away from Susanna with an effort. Cash, Jake repeated. No one would honor a check, even a cashier's check, that was 13 years old. Especially not one for millions of dollars.
How do you know stuff like that, Shug?
Susanna asked.
Jake shrugged. Like it or not, usually he didn't, he was Elmer Chambers' son. Elmer Chambers wasn't one of the world's good guys. Roland would never call him part of the white, but he had been a master of what network execs called the kill. A big coffin hunter in TV land, Jake thought. Maybe that was a little unfair, but saying that Elmer Chambers knew how to play the angles was definitely not unfair, and yeah, he was Jake, son of Elmer. He hadn't forgotten the face of his father, although he had times when he wished that wasn't so.
Cash, by all means, cash, Eddie said, breaking the silence. A deal like this has to be cash. If there's a check, we cash it in 1964, not 1977. Stick it in a gym bag. Did they have gym bags in 1964, Suze? Never mind, doesn't matter. We stick it in a bag and take it to 1977. Doesn't have to be the same day Jake bought Charlie the Choo-Choo and Riddle Dee Dum, but it ought to be close.
And it can't be after July 15th of 77, Jake put in.
God, no. Eddie agreed. We'd be all too likely to find Balazard persuaded Tower to sell, and there we'd be, bag of cash in one hand, thumbs up our asses, and big grins on our faces to pass the time of day.
There was a moment of silence. Perhaps they were considering this lurid image. And then Roland said, "You make it sound very easy, and why not? To you three, the concept of doorways between this world and your world of taxis and Aston and photographs seems almost as mundane as riding a mule would to me, or strapping on a six-gun. And there's good reason for you to feel that way. Each of you has been through one of these doors. Eddie has actually gone both ways, into this world and then back into his own."
"I gotta tell you that the return trip to New York wasn't much fun," Eddie said. "Too much gunplay. Not to mention my brother's severed head rolling across the floor of Balazar's office."
"Neither was getting through the door on Dutch Hill," Jake added.
Roland nodded, ceding these points without yielding his own. "All my life I've accepted what you said the first time I knew you, Jake. What you said when you were dying." Jake looked down, pale and without answer.
He did not like to recall that it was mercifully hazy in any case, and knew that Roland didn't either. Good, he thought. You shouldn't want to remember. You let me drop. You let me die.
You said there were other worlds than these, Roland said, and there are. New York, in all its multiple wends, is only one of many. That we are drawn there again and again has to do with the rose. I have no doubt of that. Nor do I doubt that in some way I do not understand the rose is the Dark Tower. Either that or...
Or it's another door, Susanna murmured. One that opens on the Dark Tower itself.
Roland nodded. The idea has done more than cross my mind. In any case, the many know of these other worlds, and in some fashion have dedicated their lives to them. They believe Todash to be the holiest of rites and most exalted of states. My father and his friends have long known of the glass balls, this I've told you. That the wizard's rainbow, Todash, and these magical doors may all be much the same is something we have guessed.
Where are you going with this, Shug? Susanna asked.
I'm simply reminding you that I have wandered long, Roland said, because of changes in time, a softening of time which I know you all have felt. I've quested after the Dark Tower for over 1,000 years, sometimes skipping over whole generations the way a seabird may cruise from one wave top to the next, only wetting its feet in the foam. Never in all this time did I come across one of these doors between the worlds until I came to the ones on the beach at the edge of the Western Sea. I had no idea what they were, although I could have told you something of Todash and the Bends of the Rainbow.
Roland looked at them earnestly.
You speak as though my world were as filled with magical doorways as yours is with... He thought about it. With airplanes or stage buses. That's not so.
Where we are now isn't the same as anywhere you've been before, Roland, Susanna said. She touched his deeply tanned wrist, her fingers gentle. We're not in your world anymore. You said so yourself back in that version of Topeka where Blaine finally blew his top.
Agreed, Roland said. I only want you to realize that such doors may be far more rare than you realize. And now you're speaking not of one, but two doors you can aim in time the way you'd aim a gun.
I do not aim with my hand, Eddie thought, and shivered a little. When you put it that way, Roland, it does sound a little iffy. Then what do we do next? Jake asked.
I might be able to help you with that, a voice said.
They all turned, only Roland without surprise. He had heard the stranger when he arrived, about halfway through their palaver. Roland did turn with interest, however, and one look at the man standing 20 feet from them on the edge of the road was enough to tell him that the newcomer was either from the world of his new friends or from one right next door.
Who are you? Eddie asked.
Where are your friends? Susanna asked.
Where are you from?
Jake asked. His eyes were alight with eagerness. The stranger wore a long black coat, open over a dark shirt with a notched collar. His hair was long and white, sticking up on the sides and in front as if scared. His forehead was marked with a T-shaped scar.
My friends are still back there a little piece, he said, and jerked a thumb over his shoulder at the woods in a deliberately nonspecific way. I now call Kala Brynsturgis my home. Before that, Detroit, Michigan, where I worked in a homeless shelter making soup and running AA meetings. Work I knew quite well. Before that, for a short while, Topeka, Kansas.
He observed the way the three younger ones started at that with a kind of interested amusement.
Before that, New York City. And before that, a little town called Jerusalem's Lot, in the state of Maine.
7.
You're from our side, Eddie said. He spoke in a kind of sigh. Holy God, you're really from our side. Yes, I think I am, the man in the turned-around collar said. My name is Donald Callahan.
You're a priest, Susanna said. She looked from the cross that hung around his neck, small and discreet but gleaming gold, to the larger, cruder one that scarred his forehead.
Callahan shook his head. No more. Once, Perhaps one day again with the blessing, but not now. Now I'm just a man of God. May I ask, when are you from?
1964, Susanna said. 1977, Jake said.
1987, Eddie said.
Callahan's eyes gleamed at that.
1987. And I came here in 1983, counting as we did then. So, tell me something, young man, something very important. Had the Red Sox won the World Series yet when you left?
Eddie threw back his head and laughed. The sound was both surprised and cheerful.
No, man, sorry. They came within one out of it last year, at Shea Stadium, this was, against the Mets. And then this guy named Bill Buckner, who was playing first base, let an easy grounder get through his wickets. He'll never live it down. Come on over here and sit down, what do you say? There's no coffee, but Roland, that's this beat-up-looking guy on my right, makes a pretty fair cup of Woods tea.
Callahan turned his attention to Roland, and then did an amazing thing, dropped to one knee, lowered his head slightly, and put his fist against his scarred brow.
Heil, gunslinger. May we be well met on the path.
Heil, Roland said. Come forward, good stranger, and tell us of your need.
Callahan looked up at him, surprised. Roland looked back at him calmly and nodded.
Well met or ill, it may be you will find what you seek.
And you may also, Callahan said.
Then come forward, Roland said. Come forward and join our palaver.
8. Before we really get going, can I ask you something?
This was Eddie.
Beside him, Roland had built up the fire and was rummaging in their combined gunna for the little earthen pot, an artifact of the old people in which he liked to brew tea.
Of course, young man. You're Donald Callahan.
Yes.
What's your middle name? Callahan cocked his head a little to the side, raised one eyebrow, then smiled.
Frank, after my grandfather. Does it signify?
Eddie, Susanna, and Jake shared a look. The thought that went with it flowed effortlessly among them. Donald Frank Callahan equals 19.
It does signify, Callahan said.
Perhaps, Roland said. Perhaps not.
He poured water for the tea, manipulating the water skin easily.
You seem to have suffered an accident, Callahan said, looking at Roland's right hand.
I make do, Roland said.
Gets by with a little help from his friends, you might say, Jake added, not smiling. Callahan nodded, not understanding, and knowing he need not. They were quartet. He might not know that particular term, but the term didn't matter. It was in the way they looked at each other and moved around each other.
You know my name, Callahan said. May I have the pleasure of knowing yours?
They introduced themselves. Eddie and Susanna Dean of New York, Jake Chambers of New York, Oi of Midworld, Roland Duchesne of Gilead, that was. Callahan nodded to each in turn, raising his closed fist to his forehead.
And to you comes Callahan of the lot, he said, when the introductions were done. Or so I was. Now I guess I'm just the old fella. That's what they call me in the collar.
Won't your friends join us? Roland said. We haven't a great deal to eat, but there's always tea.
Perhaps not just yet.
Ah, Roland said, and nodded as if he understood.
In any case, we've eaten well, Callahan said. It's been a good year in the collar. Until now, anyway. And we'll be happy to share what we have.
He paused, seemed to feel he had gone too far, too fast, and added,
Mayhap, if all goes well.
If, Roland said. An old teacher of mine used to call it the only word 1,000 letters long.
Callahan laughed.
Not bad. In any case, we're probably better off for food than you are. We also have fresh muffin balls. Zelia found them. But I suspect you know about those. She said the patch, although large, had a picked-over look.
Jake found them, Roland said.
Actually, it was Oi, Jake said, and stroked the bumbler's head. I guess he's sort of a muffin hound.
How long have you known we were here?
Callahan asked.
2 days.
Callahan contrived to look both amused and exasperated.
Since we cut your trail, in other words. And we tried to be so crafty.
If you didn't think you needed someone craftier than you are, you wouldn't have come, Roland said.
Callahan sighed. You say true, I say thank you.
Do you come for aid and succor? Roland asked. There was only mild curiosity in his voice, but Eddie Dean felt a deep, deep chill. The words seemed to hang there, full of resonance. Nor was he alone in feeling that. Susanna took his right hand. A moment later, Jake's hand crept into Eddie's left.
That is not for me to say.
Callahan sounded suddenly hesitant and unsure of himself, afraid, maybe.
Do you know you come to the line of Eld?
Roland asked, in that same curiously gentle voice. He stretched a hand toward Eddie, Susanna, and Jake, even toward Oi.
For these are mine, sure, as I am theirs. We are round and roll as we do, and you know what we are. Are you? Callahan asked. Are you all?
Susanna said, Roland, what are you getting us into?
Not be zero, not be free, he said. I owe not you, nor you owe me. At least for now. They have not decided to ask.
They will, Eddie thought. Dreams of the rose and the deli and little toad-ash jaunts aside, he didn't think of himself as particularly psychic, but he didn't need to be psychic to know that they, the people from whom this Callahan had come as representative, would ask. Somewhere, chestnuts had fallen into a hot fire, and Roland was supposed to pull them out. But not just Roland. You've made a mistake here, Pops, Eddie thought. Perfectly understandable, but a mistake all the same. We're not the cavalry. We're not the posse. We're not gunslingers. We're just three lost souls from the Big Apple who... But no. No. Eddie had known who they were since River Crossing, when the old people had knelt in the street to Roland. Hell, he'd known since the woods, what he still thought of as Shardik's woods, where Roland had taught them to aim with the eye, shoot with the mind, kill with the heart. Not three, not four. One. That Roland should finish them so, complete them so, was horrible. He was filled with poison and had kissed them with his poisoned lips. He had made them gunslingers. And had Eddie really thought there was no work left for the line of Arthur Eld in this mostly empty and husked-out world? That they would simply be allowed to toddle along the path of the beam until they got to Roland's dark tower and fixed whatever was wrong there? Well, guess again. It was Jake who said what was in Eddie's mind, and Eddie didn't like the look of excitement in the boy's eyes. He guessed plenty of kids had gone off to plenty of wars with that same excited-gonna-kick-some-ass look on their faces. Poor kid didn't know he'd been poisoned, and that made him pretty dumb, because no one should have known better.
They will, though, he said. Isn't that true, Mr. Callahan? They will ask.
I don't know, Callahan said. You'd have to convince them.
He trailed off, looking at Roland. Roland was shaking his head.
That's not how it works, the gunslinger said. Not being from Midworld, you may not know that, but that's not how it works. Convincing isn't what we do. We deal in lead.
Callahan sighed deeply, then nodded.
I have a book. Tales of Arthur, it's called.
Roland's eyes gleamed.
Do you? Do you indeed? I would like to see such a book. I would like it very well. Perhaps you shall, Callahan said. The stories in it are certainly not much like the tales of the Round Table I read as a boy, but... He shook his head. I understand what you're saying to me. Let's leave it at that. There are three questions, am I right? And you just asked me the first.
Three, yes, Roland said. Three is a number of power. Eddie thought, if you want to try a real number of power, Roland, old buddy, try 19.
And all three must be answered, yes.
Roland nodded. And if they are, you may ask no more.
We may be cast on, Cy Callahan, but no man may cast us back. Make sure your people, he nodded toward the woods south of them, understand that.
Gunslinger,
call me Roland. We're at peace, you and I.
All right, Roland. Hear me well, do ya, I beg. For so we say in the Kala. We who come to you are only half a dozen. We six cannot decide. Only the Kala can decide.
Democracy, Roland said. He pushed his hat back from his forehead, rubbed his forehead, and sighed.
But if we six agree, especially Cy Overholzer...
He broke off, looking rather warily at Jake.
What? Did I say something?
Jake shook his head and motioned Callahan to continue.
If we six agree, it's pretty much a done deal.
Eddie closed his eyes as if in bliss.
Say it again, pal.
Callahan eyed him, puzzled and wary.
What? Done deal, or anything from your where and when?
He paused.
Our side of the big car.
Callahan considered this, then began to grin.
I didn't know whether to shit or go blind, he said. I went on a bender, broke the bank, kicked the bucket, blew my top, walked on thin ice, rode the pink horse down Nightmare Alley. Like that?
Roland looked puzzled, perhaps even a little bored, but Eddie Dean's face was a study in bliss. Susanna and Jake seemed caught somewhere between amusement and a kind of surprised, recollective sadness.
Keep him coming, pal, Eddie said hoarsely, and made a come on, man gesture with both hands.
He sounded as if he might have been speaking through a throatful of tears.
Just keep him coming. Perhaps another time, Callahan said gently. Another time we may sit and have our own palaver about the old places and ways of saying. Baseball, if it do you. Now, though, time is short.
In more ways than you know, maybe, Roland said. What would you have of us, Cy Callahan? And now you must speak to the point, for I have told you in every way I can that we are not wanderers your friends may interview, then hire or not as they do their farmhands or saddle tramps.
For now I ask only that you stay where you are and let me bring them to you, he said. There's Tian Jeffords, who's really responsible for us being out here, and his wife Zelia. There's Overholzer, the one who most needs to be convinced that we need you.
We won't convince him or anyone, Roland said.
I understand, Callahan said hastily. Yes, you've made that perfectly clear. And there's Ben Slightman and his boy, Benny. Ben the younger is an odd case. His sister died 4 years ago when she and Benny were both 10. No one knows if that makes Ben the younger a twin or a singleton.
He stopped abruptly.
I've wandered. I'm sorry.
Roland gestured with an open palm to show it was all right.
You make me nervous. Hear me, I beg.
You don't need to beg us nothing, sugar, Susanna said.
Callahan smiled.
It's only the way we speak. In the Kala, when you meet someone, you may say, how from head to feet, do ya, I beg? And they answer, I do fine, no rust, tell the gods thank you, Cy. You haven't heard this?
They shook their heads. Although some of the words were familiar, the overall expressions only underlined the fact that they had come to somewhere else, a place where talk was strange and customs perhaps stranger.
What matters, Callahan said, is that the borderlands are terrified of creatures called the wolves, who come out of Thunderclap once a generation and steal the children. There's more to it, but that's the crux. Tian Jeffords, who stands to lose not just one child this time but two, says no more. The time has come to stand and fight. Others, men like Overholzer, say doing that would be disaster. I think Overholzer and those like him would have carried the day, but your coming has changed things.
He leaned forward earnestly.
Wayne Overholzer isn't a bad man, just a frightened man.
He's the biggest farmer in the Kala, and so he has more to lose than some of the rest.
But if he could be convinced that we might drive the wolves off, that we could actually win against them, I believe he might also stand and fight.
I told you, Roland began.
You don't convince, Callahan broke in. Yes, I understand, I do. But if they see you, hear you speak, and then convince themselves...
Roland shrugged. There'll be water if God wills it, we say. Callahan nodded.
They say it in the Kala, too.
May I move on to another related matter?
Roland raised his hands slightly, as if Eddie thought to tell Callahan it was his nickel. For a moment, the man with the scar on his brow said nothing. When he did speak, his voice had dropped. Eddie had to lean forward to hear him.
I have something. Something you want, that you may need. It has reached out to you already, I think.
Why do you say so? Roland asked. Callahan wet his lips, and then spoke a single word.
Todash.
9. What about it? Roland asked. What about Todash?
Haven't you gone?
Callahan looked momentarily unsure of himself.
Haven't any of you gone?
Say we have, Roland said. What's that to you, and to your problem in this place you call the Kala? Callahan sighed. Although it was still early in the day, he looked tired.
This is harder than I thought it would be, he said, and by quite a lot. You are considerably more, what's the word, trig, I suppose, more trig than I expected.
You expected to find nothing but saddle tramps with fast hands and empty heads. Isn't that about the size of it? Susanna asked. She sounded angry. Well, joke's on you, honey bunch. Anyway, we may be tramps, but we got no saddles, no need for saddles with no horses.
We've brought you horses, Callahan said, and that was enough.
Roland didn't understand everything, but he thought he now had enough to clarify the situation quite a bit. Callahan had known they were coming, known how many they were, known they were walking instead of riding. Some of those things could have been passed on by spies, but not all. And Todash, knowing that some or all of them had gone Todash.
As for empty heads, we may not be the brightest four on the planet, but
she broke off suddenly, wincing. Her hands went to her stomach.
Suze? Eddie asked, instantly concerned. Suze, what is it? You okay?
Just gas, she said, and gave him a smile.
To Roland, that smile didn't look quite real. And he thought he saw tiny lines of strain around the corners of her eyes.
Too many muffin balls last night.
And before Eddie could ask her any more questions, Susanna turned her attention back to Callahan.
You got something else to say, then say it, sugar.
All right. Callahan said. I have an object of great power. Although you are still many wheels from my church in the Kala, where this object is hidden, I think it's already reached out to you. Inducing the Todash state is only one of the things it does. He took a deep breath and let it out. If you will render us, for the Kala is my town now too, you can, where I hope to finish my days and then be buried, the service, I beg, I will give you this thing.
For the last time, I'd ask you to speak no more so, Roland said. His tone was so harsh that Jake looked around at him with dismay. It dishonors me and my Untet. We're bound to do as you ask if we judge your Kala in the white, and those you call wolves as agents of the outer dark. Beam breakers, if you can. We may take no reward for our services, and you must not offer. If one of your own mates were to speak so, the one you call Tian, or the one you call Overholster.
Eddie thought to correct the gunslinger's pronunciation, and then decided to keep his mouth shut.
When Roland was angry, it was usually best to stay silent. That would be different. They know nothing but legends, mayhap. But you, Sai, have at least one book which should have taught you better. I told you we deal in lead, and so we do. But that doesn't make us hired guns.
All right, all right.
As for what you have, Roland said, his voice rising and overriding Callahan's, you'd be rid of it, would you not? It terrifies you, does it not? Even if we decide to ride on past your town, you'd beg us to take it with us, would you not? Would you not?
Yes, Callahan said miserably. You speak true, and I say thank ye. But it's just that I heard a bit of your palaver, enough to know you want to go back, to pass over, as the Manny say, and not just to one place, but two, or maybe more. And time, I heard you speak of aiming, time, like a gun.
Jake's face filled with understanding and horrified wonder.
Which one is it?
He asked.
It can't be the pink one from Magus, because Roland went inside it. It never sent him Todash, so which one?
A tear spilled down Callahan's right cheek, then another. He wiped them away absently.
I've never dared handle it, but I've seen it, felt its power. Christ, the man Jesus helped me, I have Black 13 under the floorboards of my church, and it's come alive. Do you understand me?
He looked at them with his wet eyes.
It's come alive.
Callahan put his face in his hands, hiding it from them.
10. When the holy man with the scar on his forehead left to get his trail mates, the gunslinger stood watching him go without moving. Roland's thumbs were hooked into the waistband of his old patched jeans, and he looked as if he could stand that way well into the next age. The moment Callahan was out of sight, however, he turned to his own mates and made an urgent, almost bearish, clutching gesture at the air. Come to me. As they did, Roland squatted on his hunkers, Eddie and Jake did the same, and to Susanna, hunkers were almost a way of life. The gunslinger spoke almost curtly. Time is short, so tell me, each of you, and don't shilly-shally, honest or not.
Honest, Susanna said at once, then gave another little wince and rubbed beneath her left breast.
Honest, said Jake.
Honest,
said Oi, although he had not been asked.
Honest, Eddie agreed, but look.
He took an unburned twig from the edge of the campfire, brushed away a patch of pine duff, and wrote in the black earth underneath,
Kala Callahan.
Live or Memorex? Eddie said. Then, seeing Susanna's confusion, is it a coincidence or does it mean something?
Who knows? Jake asked. They were all speaking in low tones, heads together over the writing in the dirt.
It's like 19.
I think it's only a coincidence, Susanna said. Surely not everything we encounter on our path is Ka, is it? I mean, these don't even sound the same.
And she pronounced them Kala with the tongue up, making the broad A sound, Callahan with the tongue down, making a much sharper A sound.
Kala's Spanish in our world, like many of the words you remember from Magus, Roland. It means street or square, I think. Don't hold me to it, because high school Spanish is far behind me now. But if I'm right, using the word as a prefix for the name of a town, or a whole series of them, as seems to be the case in these parts, makes pretty good sense. Not perfect, but pretty good. Callahan, on the other hand... She shrugged. What is it? Irish? English?
It's sure not Spanish, Jake said. But the 19 thing...
Piss on 19. Roland said rudely. This isn't the time for number games. He'll be back here with his friends in short order, and I would speak to you, and Tet, of another matter before he does.
Do you think he could possibly be right about Black 13? Jake asked.
Yes, Roland said. Based just on what happened to you and Eddie last night, I think the answer is yes. Dangerous for us to have such a thing if he is right, but have it we must. I fear these wolves out of Thunderclap will if we don't. Never mind, that need not trouble us now.
Yet Roland looked very troubled indeed. He turned his regard toward Jake.
You started when you heard the big farmer's name. So did you, Eddie, although you concealed it better.
Sorry, Jake said. I have forgotten the face of...
Not even a bit, have you, Roland said, unless I have as well, because I've heard the name myself, and recently. I just can't remember where.
Then, reluctantly, I'm getting old.
It was in the bookstore, Jake said. He took his pack, fiddled nervously with the straps, undid them.
He flipped the pack open as he spoke. It was as if he had to make sure Charlie the Choo-Choo and Riddledy-Dum were still there, still real.
The Manhattan Restaurant of the Mind, it's so weird, once it happened to me and once I watched it happen to me. That'd make a pretty good riddle all by itself.
Roland made a rapid, rotating gesture with his diminished right hand, telling him to go on and be quick.
Mr. Tower introduced himself, Jake said, and then I did the same. Jake Chambers, I said, and he said, good handle, partner, Eddie broke in. That's what he said. Then he said Jake Chambers sounded like the name of the hero in a Western novel. The guy who blows into Black Fork, Arizona, cleans up the town, then moves on, Jake quoted. And then he said, something by Wayne D. Overholser, maybe.
He looked at Susanna and repeated it. Wayne D. Overholzer, and if you tell me that's a coincidence, Susanna, he broke into a sunny, sudden grin, I'll tell you to kiss my white boy ass. Susanna laughed. No need of that, sass box. I don't believe it's a coincidence, and when we meet Callahan's farmer friend, I intend to ask him what his middle name is. I set my warrant that it'll not only begin with D, it'll be something like Dean or Dane, just four letters. Her hand went back to the place below her breast. This gas! My, what I wouldn't give for a roll of Tums, or even a bottle of... She broke off again. Jake, what is it? What's wrong?
Jake was holding Charlie the Choo-Choo in his hands, and his face had gone dead white. His eyes were huge, shocked. Beside him, Oi whined uneasily. Roland leaned over to look, and his eyes also widened. Good gods, he said.
Eddie and Susanna looked.
The title was the same, the picture was the same, an anthropomorphic locomotive puffing up a hill, its cowcatcher wearing a grin, its headlight a cheerful eye. But the yellow letters across the bottom, Story and Pictures by Beryl Evans, were gone. There was no credit line there at all. Jake turned the book and looked at the spine. It said Charlie the Choo-Choo and Macaulay House Publishers, nothing else. South of them now, the sound of voices. Callahan and his friends approaching. Callahan from the collar. Callahan of the lot, he had also called himself.
Title page, sugar, Susanna said. Look there, quick.
Jake did.
Once again, there was only the title of the story, and the publisher's name, this time, with a colophon.
Look at the copyright page, Eddie said.
Jake turned the page. Here, on the verso of the title page and beside the recto where the story began, was the copyright information. Except there was no information, not really. Copyright 1936, it said. Numbers which added up to 19. The rest was blank.
Chapter 5. Overholzer. 1. Susanna was able to observe a good deal on that long and interesting day because Roland gave her the chance and because, after her morning's sickness passed off, she felt wholly herself again. Just before Callahan and his party drew within earshot, Roland murmured to her, "Stay close to me, and not a word from you unless I prompt it. If they take you for my Chavine, let it be so." Under other circumstances, she might have had something pert to say about the idea of being Roland's quiet little side wife, his nudge in the night. But there was no time this morning, and, in any case, it was far from a joking matter. The seriousness in his face made that clear. Also, the part of the faithful, quiet second appealed to her. In truth, any part appealed to her. Even as a child, she had rarely been so happy as when pretending to be someone else. Which probably explains all there is about you worth knowing, sugar, she thought. Susanna, Roland asked, do you hear me?
Hear you well, she told him. Don't you worry about me.
If it goes as I want, they'll see you little, and you'll see them much.
As a woman who'd grown up black in mid-20th century America, Odetta had laughed and applauded her way through Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, often rocking back and forth in her seat like one who has been visited by a revelation. Susanna knew exactly what he wanted and would give it to him. There was a part of her, a spiteful Detta Walker part, that would always resent Roland's ascendancy in her heart and mind, but for the most part she recognized him for what he was, the last of his kind. Maybe even a hero.
2. Watching Roland make the introductions, Susanna was presented dead last after Jake, and almost negligently, she had time to reflect on how fine she felt now that the nagging gas pains in her left side had departed. Hell, even the lingering headache had gone its way. And that sucker had been hanging around, sometimes in the back of her head, sometimes at one temple or the other, sometimes just above her left eye, like a migraine waiting to hatch for a week or more. And of course, there were the mornings. Everyone found her feeling nauseated and with a bad case of jelly leg for the first hour or so. She never vomited, but for that first hour, she always felt on the verge of it.
She wasn't stupid enough to mistake such symptoms, but had reason to know they meant nothing. She just hoped she wouldn't embarrass herself by swelling up as her mama's friend Jessica had done not once but twice. Two false pregnancies, and in both cases, that woman had looked ready to bust out twins, triplets even. But of course, Jessica Beasley's periods had stopped, and that made it all too easy for a woman to believe she was with child. Susanna knew she wasn't pregnant for the simplest of reasons. She was still menstruating. She'd begun a period on the very day they had awakened back on the path of the beam, with the Green Palace 25 or 30 miles behind them. She'd had another since then. Both courses had been exceptionally heavy, necessitating the use of many rags to soak up the dark flow, and before then, her menses had always been light, some months no more than a few of the spots her mother called a lady's roses. Yet she didn't complain, because before her arrival in this world, her periods had usually been painful and sometimes excruciating. The two she'd had since returning to the path of the beam hadn't hurt at all. If not for the soaked rags she'd carefully buried to one side of their path or the other, she wouldn't have had a clue that it was her time of the month. Maybe it was the purity of the water. Of course she knew what all this was about. It didn't take a rocket scientist, as Eddie sometimes said. The crazy, scrambled dreams she couldn't recall, the weakness and nausea in the mornings, the transient headaches, the strangely fierce gas attacks and occasional cramps all came down to the same thing. She wanted his baby. More than anything else in the world, she wanted Eddie Dean's chap growing in her belly. What she didn't want was to puff up in a humiliating false pregnancy. Never mind all that now, she thought, as Callahan approached with the others. Right now you've got to watch, got to see what Roland and Eddie and Jake don't see. That way nothing gets dropped. And she felt she could do that job very well. Really, she had never felt finer in her life. 3. Callahan came first. Behind him were two men, one who looked about 30 and another who looked to Susanna nearly twice that. The older man had heavy cheeks that would be jowls in another 5 years or so, and lines carving their courses from the sides of his nose down to his chin. "I want lines," her father would have called them, and Dan Holmes had had a pretty good set of his own. The younger man wore a battered sombrero, the older a clean white Stetson that made Susanna want to smile. It looked like the kind of hat the good guy would wear in an old black-and-white Western movie. Still, she guessed a lid like that didn't come cheap, and she thought the man wearing it had to be Wayne Overholzer. The big farmer, Roland had called him. The one that had to be convinced, according to Callahan. "But not by us," Susanna thought, which was sort of a relief. The tight mouth, the shrewd eyes, and most of all those deep carved lines, there was another slashed vertically into his brow just above the eyes, suggested Cy Overholzer would be a pain in the ass when it came to convincing. Just behind these two, specifically behind the younger of the two, there came a tall, handsome woman, probably not black, but nonetheless nearly as dark-skinned as Susanna herself. Bringing up the rear was an earnest-looking man in spectacles and farmer's clothes, and a likely-looking boy probably 2 or 3 years older than Jake. The resemblance between this pair was impossible to miss. They had to be Slightman the elder and younger.
"Boy may be older than Jake in years," she thought, "but he's got a soft look about him all the same." True, but not necessarily a bad thing. Jake had seen far too much for a boy not yet in his teens. Done too much as well. Overholzer looked at their guns. Roland and Eddie each wore one of the big revolvers with the sandalwood grips. The .44 Ruger from New York City hung under Jake's arm in what Roland called a docker's clutch. Then at Roland. He made a perfunctory salute, his half-closed fist skimming somewhere at least close to his forehead. There was no bow. If Roland was offended by this, it didn't show on his face. Nothing showed on his face but polite interest.
"Heil, gunslinger,"
the man who had been walking beside Overholzer said, and this one actually dropped to one knee, with his head down and his brow resting on his fist. "I am Tian Jeffords, son of Luke. This lady is my wife, Zelia."
"Heil," Roland said. "Let me be Roland to you if it suits. May your days be long upon the earth," sighed Jeffords.
"Tian, please. And may you and your friends have twice the—"
"I'm Overholzer," the man in the white Stetson broke in brusquely. "We've come to meet you, you and your friends, at the request of Callahan and young Jeffords. I'd pass the formalities and get down to business as soon as possible. Do you take no offense, I beg?"
"Ask pardon, but that's not quite how it is," Jeffords said. "There was a meeting, and the men of the Kala voted."
Overholzer broke in again. He was, Susanna thought, just that kind of man. She doubted he was even aware he was doing it.
"The town, yes, the Kala. I've come along with every wish to do right by my town and my neighbors, but this is a busy time for me, none busier."
"Char, you tree," Roland said mildly, and although Susanna knew a deeper meaning for this phrase, one that made her back prickle, Overholzer's eyes lit up. She had her first inkling then of how this day was going to go.
"Come reap, yes, sir, say thank ye."
Off to one side, Callahan was gazing into the woods with a kind of studied patience. Behind Overholzer, Tian Jeffords and his wife exchanged an embarrassed glance. The Slightmans only waited and watched.
"You understand that much, anyway."
"In Gilead, we were surrounded by farms and freeholds," Roland said. "I got my share of hay and corn and barn, aye, and sharp root, too." Overholzer was giving Roland a grin that Susanna found fairly offensive. It said, "We know better than that, don't we, Si? We're both men of the world, after all."
"Where are you from, really, Si Roland?"
"My friend, you need to see an audiologist," Eddie said. Overholzer looked at him puzzled.
"Beg my ear?"
Eddie made a "there, you see" gesture and nodded. "Exactly what I mean."
"Be still, Eddie," Roland said, still as mild as milk.
"Si Overholzer, we may take a moment to exchange names and speak a good wish or two, surely. For that is how civilized, kindly folk behave, is it not?" Roland paused, a brief, underlining pause, and then said, "With harriers it may be different. For there are no harriers here." Overholzer's lips pressed together, and he looked hard at Roland, ready to take offense. He saw nothing in the gunslinger's face that offered it, and relaxed again.
"Thank ye," he said. "Tian and Zelia Jeffords, as told—"
Zelia curtsied, spreading invisible skirts to either side of her battered corduroy pants.
"And here are Ben Slightman the elder, and Benny the younger."
The father raised his fist to his forehead and nodded. The son, his face a study in awe—it was mostly the guns, Susanna surmised—bowed with his right leg out stiffly in front of him and the heel planted.
"The old fellow you already know,"
Overholzer finished, speaking with exactly the sort of offhand contempt at which Overholzer himself would have taken deep offense, had it been directed toward his valued self. Susanna supposed that when you were the big farmer, you got used to talking just about any way you wanted. She wondered how far he might push Roland before discovering that he hadn't been pushing at all. Because some men couldn't be pushed. They might go along with you for a while, but then... "These are my trail mates," Roland said. "Eddie Dean and Jake Chambers of New York, and this is Susanna." He gestured at her without turning in her direction. Overholzer's face took on a knowing, intensely male look Susanna had seen before. Detta Walker had had a way of wiping that look off men's faces that she didn't believe Si Overholzer would care for at all. Nonetheless, she gave Overholzer and the rest of them a demure little smile and made her own invisible skirts curtsy. She thought hers as graceful in its way as the one made by Zelia Jeffords, but of course a curtsy didn't look quite the same when you were missing your lower legs and feet. The newcomers had marked the part of her that was gone, of course, but their feelings on that score didn't interest her much. She did wonder what they thought of her wheelchair, though. The one Eddie had gotten her in Topeka, where Blaine the Mono had finished up. These folks would never have seen the like of it.
Callahan may have, she thought, because Callahan's from our side. He, the boy, said, "Is that a bumbler?" "Hush, do you?" Sleitman said, sounding almost shocked that his son had spoken. "That's okay," Jake said. "Yeah, he's a bumbler. Oi, go to him." He pointed at Ben the younger. Oi trotted around the campfire to where the newcomer stood and looked up at the boy with his gold-ringed eyes.
"I never saw a tame one before," Tian said. "Have heard of him, of course, but the world has moved on."
"Mayhap not all of it has moved on," Roland said. He looked at Overholzer. "Mayhap some of the old ways still hold."
"Can I pat him?" the boy asked Jake. "Will he bite?" "You can, and he won't."
As Sleitman the younger dropped on his hunkers in front of Oi, Susanna certainly hoped Jake was right. Having a Billy Bumbler chomp off this kid's nose would not set them on in any style at all. But Oi suffered himself to be stroked, even stretching his long neck up so he could sample the odor of Sleitman's face. The boy laughed. "What did you say his name was?" Before Jake could reply, the Bumbler spoke for himself.
"Oi!"
They all laughed. And as simply as that, they were together, well met on this road that followed the path of the beam. The bond was fragile, but even Overholzer sensed it, and when he laughed, the big farmer looked as if he might be a good enough fellow. Maybe frightened, and pompous to be sure, but there was something there. Susanna didn't know whether to be glad or afraid. 4.
"I'd have a word alone with you, if it does you," Overholzer said.
The two boys had walked off a little distance with Oi between them, Sleitman the younger asking Jake if the Bumbler could count, as he'd heard some of them could.
"I think not, Wayne," Jafford said at once. "It was agreed we'd go back to our camp, break bread, and explain our need to these folk, and then, if they agreed to come further—"
"I have no objection to passing a word with Cy Overholzer," Roland said.
"Nor will you, Cy Jaffords, I think, for is he not your dean?" And then, before Tian could object further or deny it, "Give these folks tea, Susanna. Eddie, step over here with us a bit, if it do you fine." This phrase, new to all their ears, came out of Roland's mouth sounding perfectly natural. Susanna marveled at it. If she had tried saying that, she would have sounded as if she were sucking up.
"We have food south a ways," Zalia said timidly. "Food and graff and coffee. Andy—"
"We'll eat with pleasure and drink your coffee with joy," Roland said. "But have tea first, I beg. We'll only be a moment or two, won't we, Cy?" Overholzer nodded. His look of stern unease had departed. So had his stiffness of body. From the far side of the road, close to where a woman named Mia had slipped into the woods only the night before, the boys laughed as Oi did something clever. Benny with surprise, Jake with obvious pride. Roland took Overholzer's arm and led him a little piece up the road. Eddie strolled with him. Jeffords, frowning, made as if to go with them anyway. Susanna touched his shoulder. "Don't," she said in a low voice. "He knows what he's doing." Jeffords looked at her doubtfully for a moment, then came with her.
"Perhaps I could build that fire up for you a bit, Cy," Sleitman the elder said with a kindly look at her diminished legs. "For I see a few sparks yet, so I do."
"If you please," Susanna said, thinking how wonderful all this was. How wonderful, how strange. Potentially deadly as well, of course. But she had come to learn that also had its charms. It was the possibility of darkness that made the day seem so bright.
5. Up the road, about 40 feet from the others, the three men stood together. Overholzer appeared to be doing all the talking, sometimes gesturing violently to punctuate a point. He spoke as if Roland were no more than some gun-bunny hobo who happened to come drifting down the road with a few no-account friends riding drogue behind him. He explained to Roland that Tian Jaffords was a fool, albeit a well-meaning one, who did not understand the facts of life. He told Roland that Jaffords had to be restrained, cooled off, not only in his best interests, but in those of the entire Kala. He insisted to Roland that if anything could be done,
Wayne Overholzer, son of Alan, would be first in line to do it. He'd never shirked a chore in his life. But to go against the wolves was madness. And, he added, lowering his voice, speaking of madness, there was the old fellow. When he kept to his church and his rituals, he was fine. In such things, a little madness made a fine sauce. This, however, was somewhat different. Aye, and by a long hike. Roland listened to it all, nodding occasionally. He said almost nothing.
And when Overholzer was finally finished, Calabrin Sturges's big farmer simply looked with a kind of fixed fascination at the gunman who stood before him.
Mostly at those faded blue eyes.
"Are ye what you say?" he asked finally. "Tell me true, Si."
"I'm Roland of Gilead," the gunslinger said.
"From the line of Eld? You do say it."
"By watch and by warrant," Roland said.
"But Gilead," Overholzer paused, "Gilead's long gone."
"I," Roland said, "am not."
"Would you kill us all or cause us to be killed? Tell me, I beg."
"What would you?" Si Overholzer. "Not later, not a day or a week or a moon from now, but at this minute." Overholzer stood a long time, looking from Roland to Eddie and then back to Roland again. Here was a man not used to changing his mind. If he did so, it would hurt him like a rupture. From down the road came the laughter of the boys as Oi fetched something Benny had thrown, a stick almost as big as the bumbler was himself.
"I'd listen," Overholzer said at last. "I'd do that much, God's help me, and say thank ye."
In other words, he explained all the reasons why it was a fool's errand, Eddie told her later, and then did exactly what Roland wanted him to do. It was like magic.
"Sometimes Roland is magic," she said.
6. The Kala's party had camped in a pleasant hilltop clearing not far south of the road, but just enough off the path of the beam so that the clouds hung still and moveless in the sky, seemingly close enough to touch. The way there through the woods had been carefully marked. Some of the blazes Susanna saw were as big as her palm. These people might be crackerjack farmers and stockmen, but it was clear the woods made them uneasy.
"May I spell you on that chair a bit, young man?" Overholzer asked Eddie as they began the final push upslope.
Susanna could smell roasting meat and wondered who was tending to the cooking if the entire Callahan Overholzer party had come out to meet them. Had the woman mentioned someone named Andy, a servant, perhaps? She had. Overholzer's personal? Perhaps. Surely a man who could afford a Stetson as grand as the one now tipped back on his head could afford a personal.
"Do ya?"
Eddie said. He didn't quite dare to add, "I beg." Still sounds phony to him, Susanna thought, but he moved aside and gave over the wheelchair's push handles to Overholzer. The farmer was a big man, it was a fair slope, and now he was pushing a woman who weighed close on to 130 pounds, but his breathing, although heavy, remained regular.
"Might I ask you a question, Si Overholzer?"
Eddie asked.
"Of course," Overholzer replied.
"What's your middle name?" There was a momentary slackening of forward motion. Susanna put this down to mere surprise.
"That's an odd one, young fellow. Why do you ask?"
"Oh, it's a kind of hobby of mine," Eddie said. "In fact, I tell fortunes by 'em."
"Careful, Eddie, careful," Susanna thought, but she was amused in spite of herself.
"Oh, I?"
"Yes," Eddie said. "You now, I'll bet your middle name begins with..."
He seemed to calculate.
"With the letter D,"
pronouncing D in the fashion of the great letters in the high speech.
"And I'd say it's short. 5 letters? Maybe only 4?
The slackening of forward push came again.
"Devils say please," Overholzer exclaimed. "How do you know? Tell me."
Eddie shrugged. "It's no more than counting and guessing, really. In truth, I'm wrong almost as often as I'm right."
"More often," Susanna said.
"Tell you my middle name's Dale," Overholzer said, "although if anyone ever explained me why, it slipped my mind. I lost my folks when I was young."
"Sorry for your loss," Susanna said, happy to see that Eddie was moving away.
probably to tell Jake she'd been right about the middle name. Wayne Dale Overholzer equals 19.
"Is that young man Trig or a fool?"
Overholzer asked Susanna. "Tell me, I beg, for I cannot tell myself." "A little of both," she said.
"No question about this pushchair, though, would you say? It's Trig as a compass."
"Say thank you," she said, then gave a small inward sigh of relief. It had come out sounding all right, probably because she hadn't exactly planned on saying it.
"Where did it come from?"
"Back on our way a good distance," she said. This turn of the conversation did not please her much. She thought it was Roland's job to tell their history or not tell it. He was their din. Besides, what was told by only one could not be contradicted. Still, she thought she could say a little more. "There's a finny. We came from the other side of that, where things are much different." She craned around to look at him. His cheeks and neck had flushed, but really, she thought, he was doing very well for a man who had to be deep into his 50s. "Do you know what I'm talking about?"
"Yeah,"
he said, hawked, and spat off to the left.
"Not that I've seen or heard it myself, you understand. I never wander far. Too much to do on the farm. Those of the Kala aren't woodsy people, as a rule. Anyway, do you ken it?"
"Oh, yes, I think I ken it," Susanna thought, spying another blaze roughly the size of a dinner plate. The unfortunate tree so marked would be lucky to survive the coming winter.
"Andy's told of the finny many and many a. Makes a sound, he says, but can't tell what it is."
"Who's Andy?"
"You'll meet him for yourself soon enough, Si. Are you from this Kala York, like your friends?"
"Yes," she said, again on her guard. He swung her wheelchair around a hoary old ironwood. The trees were sparser now, and the smell of cooking much stronger. Meat and coffee. Her stomach rumbled.
"And they be not gunslingers," Overholzer said, nodding at Jake and Eddie. "You'll not tell me so, surely."
"You must decide that for yourself when the time comes," Susanna said. He made no reply for a few moments. The wheelchair rumbled over a rock outcropping. Ahead of them, Oi padded along between Jake and Benny Sleitman, who had made friends with boyhood's eerie speed. She wondered if it was a good idea, for the two boys were different. Time might show them how much, and to their sorrow.
"He scared me," Overholzer said.
He spoke in a voice almost too low to hear, as if to himself.
"'Twere his eyes, I think. Mostly his eyes."
"Would you go on as you have, then?" Susanna asked. The question was far from as idle as she hoped it sounded, but she was still startled by the fury of his response.
"Are you mad, woman? Course not. Not if I saw a way out of the box we're in. Hear me well. That boy," he pointed at T. and Jaffords, walking ahead of them with his wife, "that boy as much as accused me of running yellow. Had to make sure they all knew I didn't have any children of the age the wolves fancy. Aye, not like he has, can it? But do you think I'm a fool that can't count the cost?"
"Not me," Susanna said calmly.
"But do he? I halfway think so."
Overholzer spoke as a man does when pride and fear are fighting it out in his head.
"Do I want to give the babbies to the wolves? Babbies that are sent back ruined to be a drag on the town ever after? No. But neither do I want some hard case to lead us all to blunder with no way back."
She looked over her shoulder at him and saw a fascinating thing. He now wanted to say yes, to find a reason to say yes. Roland had brought him that far, and with hardly a word, had only looked at him. There was movement in the corner of her eye.
"Holy Christ!" Eddie cried.
Susanna's hand darted for a gun that wasn't there. She turned forward in the chair again, coming down the slope toward them, moving with a prissy care that she couldn't help find amusing, even in her startlement, was a metal man at least 7 feet high. Jake's hand had gone to the docker's clutch and the butt of the gun that hung there.
"Easy, Jake," Roland said.
The metal man, eyes flashing blue, stopped in front of them. It stood perfectly still for perhaps 10 seconds, plenty of time for Susanna to read what was stamped on its chest. North Central Positronics, she thought, back for another curtain call, not to mention Lamerck Industries. Then the robot raised one silver arm, placing a silver hand against its stainless steel forehead.
"Heil, gunslinger, come from afar," it said. "Long days and pleasant nights."
Roland raised his fingers to his own forehead.
May you have twice the number, Andy Sy.
Thank ye. Clickings from its deep and incomprehensible guts, then it leaned forward toward Roland, blue eyes flashing brighter. Susanna saw Eddie's hand creep to the sandalwood grip of the ancient revolver he wore. Roland, however, never flinched.
I've made a goodish meal, gunslinger. Many good things from the fullness of the earth, I...
Say thank ye, Andy.
May it do you fine.
The robot's guts clicked again. In the meantime, would you perhaps care to hear your horoscope?